It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Independence, because we, I don't know, we got a beat on some of the stuff happening, but I mean, dang, that didn't make it any better. You know, this Saturday at the Arizona Breakfast Club, for those of you here in Arizona, the Arizona Breakfast Club, first Saturday of each month at the Hometown Buffet, just south of McDowell on Scottsdale Road. And Scottsdale is going to be Mark J. Victor, criminal defense attorney, and Powell Gamble going to be discussing, you know, what's coming, you know, this baseline killer thing, lawsuit with, and of course, the jury trial verdict and lawsuit of Pastor Steven Anderson that was beat up at the checkpoint. Jury found him not guilty on the two counts of whatever they made up. Now, of course, you know, now they're going for a civil suit, which is, you know, was always the plan because, dang, you know, it's just, and it's getting worse. In fact, we had a letter to the editor that was sent yesterday. Let me see, you know, I should pull that up. Because what happened was I got a call just like this morning when I get a call from a guy in Los Angeles going, man, this happens all the time? I mean, this is, you know, they're buzzing me with the helicopter. I'm getting harassed, you know, blah, 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 blah. I want to tell a story. Well, just a day before, I get a call from a guy named Kevin Flannery. Well, he is a surfer. So he's going to San Diego to the West Coast. He wants to, you know, go do some surfing. Well, of course, if you got a surfboard in your car, then you must be a pot smoker. You druggie. I don't know about how long's your hair, man. You know, I know there's some drugs in here. You know, surfboard equals drugs. So they stopped him at a checkpoint in California right before you get to Yuma. You know, this other checkpoint. Now, of course, when he gets through that one, yeah, we called ahead, and they're gonna check too. We know there's some drugs. We got dogs say there was drugs. You know, that was one of the things that came up in Pastor Anderson's case. Mark Victor brought up, and he goes, where's the records on the hit rate on these dogs? Do you ever have a false positive? Does a dog ever alert and you go search and you find nothing? Now, where's the numbers on that? Or is it every single time the dog went rough, you looked and there was drugs? And they go, well, they're trained to identify people in vehicles and drugs. Well, of course there's people in the vehicle. What the heck does that mean? And they go, well, you know, because. And you go, okay, the drugs. Okay, so I want to know the record of when they have false positives. Well, they don't have false positives. There is no such thing as a false positive. Really? Well, what the heck does that mean? Well, it means that there must have been at one time some drugs or people in the car. Seriously? So you just get to do whatever you want. Is that what's going on? Well, let me go ahead and read this real quick. And it's just, you know, Kevin Flannery, dear editor. I want to tell you my story from the weekend so other Americans are more prepared than I was when traveling in Southern California and Arizona. I read some of the comments on the webpage today, and I think if those who supported the Border Patrol concerning the video shown experienced what I did, they would think differently. So I guess he's, you know, going on. A lot of people say, yeah, we got to, you know, get the Mexicans or whatever. So he's going, look, man, if you went through it the way I did, you'd think differently. I was traveling back from San Diego yesterday after a fun weekend surfing. I was stopped at the California checkpoint on I-8 East and asked my citizenship. I told the Border Patrolman I was an American. He instructed me to pull off to the side for an inspection. I did as I was told. When I got out of the car, I was set sent to a covered area and told to keep my hands out of my pockets. The agent told me the reason he had me pulled over was that he smelled pot in my car. He asked me if I had a criminal record, if I smoked pot, and if I was transporting pot. I said no. I told him I do not do drugs, drink, or smoke. He asked me all the questions again and told me he was going to search my vehicle and get the dogs there. I told him to do whatever he felt he needed to do. At this point, I was not too concerned. I had nothing to hide, and I do not do drugs, so why worry, right? Now, this is before they even had drugs. I mean, dogs, you know, sniffing drugs. Right? I guess he just sent them over there, and then we'll get the dogs. Or, I don't know, whatever reason. They're just trying to intimidate him. They then had another agent sit with me. He just talked casually, but the conversation always went back to drugs. Trying to trick me into saying anything self-incriminating, they found nothing. So the agent told me to confess or they would put the screws to my car. I told him again that I did not do drugs, sell drugs, or transport drugs. He then went over to my car and took everything out. I looked at the agent next to me and said, well, will take a while. His response was, if you had just told the truth and been honest, we would have gone easy on you. The heck does that mean? I reaffirmed my innocence. Now I was nervous. I was unsure of what to expect. After another 10 to 15 minutes, the initial agent went to give me my driver's license and then pulled it away. He said, I know you're lying to me. They have dogs at the next checkpoint, and you will be charged with a felony when they find the drugs. The whole ordeal lasted about 30 minutes. I was embarrassed and stressful, to say the least. I gave 5 years of my life to the service of our country and got treated like a criminal. At the border patrols, there is no innocent until proven guilty. Yesterday, I was naive. Today, I am aware. Americans need to be prepared for these stops and have a lawyer's number handy. Learn your rights. I am still not sure what I can say, do, and not say, do at a Border Patrol checkpoint, but I will find out. Sincerely, Kevin Flannery. So this is, you know, this is typical. This happens all day, every day. And what did the Supreme Court just come down? I think it was last year or year before, said, yeah, of course law enforcement can lie. They can say whatever they want to get you to do anything. That's perfectly legal. Of course, that's the government for you. They're allowed to lie. You're not. So I'm going, wow. They just keep going. And then, of course, the graphic that I put up for them, you know, was the Silver Surfer from, you know, the Fantastic Four. You know, Silver Surfer's going to come get you. You know, so yeah, it made him feel better. He vented a little bit. But is this the solution? Well, he had the solution. I'm going to go find out some more. And technology is really having a big impact. And I wanted to finish on the Skype thing. I want to tell you this point real quick before we get to Maria. Because I want her to comment on this stuff. You know, I mean, kind of sharing this, you know, get her. Yeah, she's seething over here. Yeah, keep making your comments. Write down the piece of paper there. You know, I know you want to say, man. You know, we'll go ahead and plug you in here in a second. Because when my grandson was born a couple weeks ago, my wife's parents, my in-laws, live in Pennsylvania. Well, of course, we got there, and, you know, right, the baby had been born, and we just got there. I mean, she went in, we were right behind her. It was on my granddaughter, her big sister. It was her first birthday. Well, she got a little brother for her birthday, so they share the same birthday. We all, you know, finished what we were doing, getting everything all packed up, and they're going to the hospital. You know, she went in labor. She got to the hospital, had the baby 30 minutes later. I mean, last time it was like 30-something hours, but this time it was like, man, we know this drill, boom, baby. Okay, cool, I like that. So the baby's there, we go, and what do? I get my little netbook that I have, and I go, and I type in, I get on Skype, push it, video's going, I walk around with my laptop on my chest facing out, and I go and I look. Oh, everybody says hi, all the kids, you know, and their spouse. Oh, and this is, you know, new girlfriend of, and this, and, you know, and hey, how you doing? And, oh, let's go down the hall here, da, 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 go into where the babies are. And my daughter-in-law's mother is a baby nurse there at that hospital, so we can have a little bit more access. I mean, you know, we go back in there where they're, you know, changing the baby and doing the baby and baby fine, whatever, and under the lamps. blah. Look at the baby. Oh, got to see and a penis. The name continues. Okay, so we do this and we go oh and say oh ain't he cute and that and talking and going back and this goes on for 10 minutes and my you know 80-year-old, 70. I think my father-in-law is like in his mid-late 70s, you know, near 80 years old, and they are there at the birth of their great-grandchild. And this is the fact that my in-laws are even freaking on Skype was amazing to me, you know, to begin with right there. But having this technology to be able to live feed these kinds of things, you think, and I'm 49, you think these kids don't know how to use their iPhone and they are constantly live feeding? It's called Quick. Quik.com. You just put it on your smartphone. I got a BlackBerry Storm. You push a button. And it starts doing live feed of video that immediately is being archived on your own website that you designate. And it's there right then. Even if they take the phone, it's already archived. It's over. It's done. And there's nothing they can do about it. Oh. You see, your mind's starting to go? You're starting to see what's coming? It's going to be information is going to rule out.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, Led Zeppelin never hurt anybody. Here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. I want to finish this Skype thing before we get to Maria. Maria Heller, man, she does, you know, I'm building all this up because these are all the things I want to talk about. So I want to get them out there so, you know, she can, you know, knows what we're talking about, having a opinion. Here, Cisco makes an offer to buy Skype. Okay. That's what made me think of this Skype thing and getting my grandbaby. Okay. And having anybody across the planet sharing it because these revolutionaries, I mean, just in the last couple of years, they've had so many circumstances in which they're like, oh, let me tell you an app that I want on my phone. Freaking the man putting the left jackboot or the right jackboot and jackboot on my throat party, okay? Doing, I need to get this up, and I need to get up right now. I had, after the revolution march that we did the summer of 08, July 12th of 2008, right before the presidential election, we had the big Ron Paul thing in Washington, D.C. on the West Capitol lawn, woo-hooing. And I was one of the MCs there. So Gary Franchi from Restore the Republic and myself MC'd that. And it was an all-day thing. I mean, it was hot. But there were tens of thousands of people there. One of the speakers was Adam Kokesh. Well, he's an Iraq veteran. He got up, and, man, he gave a great speech. It was, man, oh, humanity marches on. He was, man, these bad guys. That speech had such an impact, the FBI started following him. I mean, went to school there, went to university in Washington, D.C. I can't remember which one, but he is going to school, and they're following him on the metro. And he called me sometimes. He said, Ernie, man, I think this is it, man. They're on the platform. There's definitely some intimidation going on because he was one of the protesters that, you know, in front of the Capitol, in front of the White House, doing, you know, from Iraq Veterans Against the War. So, and then he ran for Congress in New Mexico out of Santa Fe, and now he's a talk show host. In Albuquerque. Very interesting. Well, he had this technology. He had a blog, and he would, whenever he's just, because you hit it and it starts recording. And as soon as you hit the button again, it stops the recording, then transmits it and posts it on your page as a YouTube, you know, or as a quick document or whatever. So he's doing it. He's like, boom, 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 boom. These guys, it was amazing the stuff he was getting and how they're harassing him. So I'm going, wow, this is cool tech. Well, a lot of these guys do this stuff. Well, Skype has become so popular so quickly that online auction giant eBay late last year sold a majority stake in Skype for some $2 billion. And they haven't even gone with an initial public offering yet. You know, that was just to get some investor who wants to have $2 billion? Done. All right. Well, these guys are out of where the heck they are. It's not even in the U.S. It's out of Luxembourg or something. Yeah, Luxembourg-based Skype announced plans in early August to list on the NASDAQ stock exchange. Ooh. here it goes. Well, before they do, Cisco, which is a computer memory guys, Cisco, computer geeks, leader in networking equipment, wants to buy Skype before they go public. They're going, no. You want to sell to us. Well, Google was going to buy them. They were sniffing around, but they were afraid to get some antitrust thing going on. So Google makes its voice service for Gmail users has just gone live. If you use Gmail, you start getting this kind of thing. They want to kind of compete with the Skype deal. So it might be a good time for them to sell. This kind of technology, and who is this? You know, college students? I mean, you know, teenagers, 12th graders? I mean, you know what? You know, they come up, you know, I want to do that. What do you think Facebook was? They got a movie coming out. It's the power to share information instantaneously with the planet. Well, let's go ahead and see what Maria Heller has to say about such things. Now, you're sitting there listening and just ready to jump in on all this stuff. You've been making notes? Yes, are you?
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, now, you know, let's get your spiel. Go ahead and tell me, you know, who's Maria? You know, here in Arizona, you've been active and doing your podcasting and so on, and archives. You know, a lot of great guys. I mean, you've interviewed some of the boys. You know, and I've seen the list of people you interviewed. I'm going, hey, I want that guy's number. You know, so go ahead and tell me. You know, what motivated you to start doing your activism this way, and how do you thrive and survive in such Arizona of heat? You know, what is it you do for a living? Are you retired doing this? Tell me everything. I want to know, Maria.
I'm retired. I don't think I'll ever be able to retire. Actually, Ernie, I fell into radio by accident. It was just a business deal I had with a partner in Las Vegas about 12 years ago. She needed a station to advertise her golf junkets on for the high rollers in Vegas. Sent me to Phoenix with a chunk of cash in my hand, said, go buy some airtime. I went down to KFNX at the time, bought a six-month contract. And I says, who's going to do the show? She says, you will. And I says, me? What am I going to talk about? At the time, you know, I made my living as an artist and doing healing work and work as a psychic, basically, because it's something I've always had. And I said, what am I going to talk about? I just thought it was a joke. And I started doing kind of a spiritual kind of call-in show. And then I'd add a little bit of news, a little bit of astrology. For me, it was just fun. And then I started doing, like, DJing, just rock and talking about how it was in the 60s, discos, all this stuff. And then after I got tired of doing radio, somebody came up to me and said he was starting internet radio. This was, we're looking at, you know, the end of July of 2000. And I said, what's that? Most people don't even know they have speakers on their phones. So I told him, it sounds like fun. I'll try for a couple of months. And I was doing kind of just a fun show. I had fans, you know, just loving me and, you know, making me jewelry, sending me gifts. Life was good. And then George Bush said he was going to run for office. And at that point, it's like a chill went through my whole body. And the two words that blasted through my head was politics and the environment. And I've always been an environmentalist. And I knew that if Bush got in, it's the end of the environment. It's too late. I already knew the time clock we were on to clean up the filth that we've created on this planet. So I started backing into all the things most Americans never wanted to know about, you know, starting with Bill Cooper's work, you know, Behold a Pale Horse, and all the way up and all the way through.
You know, this is it. This is why I wanted Maria to come in. You know, just from her background, you would get the impression that, yeah, lunatic fringe. I know you're out there. She's kind of the left, progressive, Air America type. Got, you know, spirit. But then she's got Bill Cooper. I mean, you know, I mean, what the heck? He's like, you know, the godfather of all that is holy with guns, okay? So, you know, I'm going, that's one thing that's interesting. And what I wanted to share with the audience is that as I spend more time as an activist working in politics and so on, you start to find people from the left. I'm finding that from a freedom-oriented libertarian perspective, I have more in common with than I do the neocon conservative types. Oh, I'll tell you this before we're going to break here. Like I tell you this, we had a meeting today. Mm-hmm. Okay, our primary is over here. It's starting to cool off a little bit. You know, it's time for us to do our sign thing, the love illusion. We'll go, you know, what message do we want to imprint on this election cycle here and have some fun? One of the races is Dan Quayle's son, Ben, I think, Ben Quayle. He's running for office. Now, there is a libertarian in the race. You know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, you know, they have any delusions, you'll win. You got to spend a gazillion dollars. But it's interesting is that his name is Michael Schoen. He's the son of the founder of U-Haul. So he has a couple of dimes to rub together. I mean, you know, the guy's got some skills, and he's smart, and he's a big 9/11 truther. Mm-hmm. So here you have an attorney that's got, you know, resources that, you know, comes from a prominent family here, the founders of U-Haul. I mean, you know, he's got some respect. And he ran last election cycle, really bringing attention to 9/11. He'd give them max out contributions to any and all of the candidates that would at least watch three DVDs. You watch, just say you watched them.
Right.
I'll give you a max out. Just say you watched them. I mean, it just kind of activism he wants to do. Well, here's the idea that we had. God save it. You guys, on the edge, this is kind of fun that we have with just making sign. What could we do with Dan Quayle's son is now the Republican nominee and probably be congressman, you know, going to Congress, Quayle. Again, another Quayle. He used to be, his father was VP to Bush. What fun might we have? Wait, I'll tell you.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
There's plenty to talk about. We're rock and roll and whatnot. Oh! I gotta tell you, I let it up. I left you hanging. I gotta tell you what this Quayle thing is. So Ben Quayle is the son of Dan Quayle, which was VP to Bush back in the day. Okay, so Daddy Bush is in there, you know, late 80s, early 90s, and he's got Dan Quayle, Mr. Potato Head. You know, I mean, he can't spell whatever. Who cares? I can't either. So I go, well, isn't that the way you're supposed to spell it? So anyway, so what happens is we're going, you know, what could we do to have fun? You know, don't, you know, vote for him, don't vote for them, whatever. You know, that's not the mess. I mean, we want to have fun and have a message, something that just, oh, man, they just don't really grit their teeth and just prefer it go away. Well, imagine, you know, it's Quayle. You could have like a stencil of a little, you know, like the Partridge Family, you know, you got a stencil of a little Quayle, you know, or Quayle up there, you know, on the top of the sign, and then that little Quayle, you know, because you got Daddy Quayle, Baby Quayle, you got two Quayles, and what's the slogan you put underneath it? Just another bird in the bushes. Oh, you know,
like
that's going to hurt. They're
like
going to go, because if you look at the finance support and the contributions to Quayle's campaign, it's like, you know, Rumsfeld. I mean, you know, it's the neocon regurgitation of. It's the Karl Rove, you know, Cheney people. So I'm just going, duh. So you got to have some fun with this.
Wasn't Dick Cheney hunting Quayle when he shot his friend in the face? Maybe he should have been on the poster with one of his guns.
Oh, God, I'm feeling more slogans coming. You know, this is kind of fun that we're going to have. He's going to be sent to Washington with, you know, yeah, I don't think you're getting a free ride on this one. It's going to be, you know, it's just another Quayle in the bushes. You know, this is, I mean, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know right there. So we're sitting here thinking one of the young guys is early 20s. So what'd they do? They went out, and, you know, Maria, you can see these guys here.
Absolutely.
You hadn't have seen them, you know, coming in the door. You wouldn't even know where we were, you know.
Right.
So, because we're kind of hid back here, you know. We're kind of, you walk in, you go, yeah, what was your impression of this place? You come in, you're like,
I was
wow.
Like, wow, too bad I left my gun at home. That was my impression.
Why? Because everybody else has theirs or something?
It was daylight.
Oh, well, you know, the one thing that hopefully the impact you got is that there's a lot of capacity here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. And, you know, I thought you made that statement because a lot of these guys are packing. You know, they always are.
Didn't notice.
But the so what happens is they go and they get the stencil material, you know, which is kind of a vinyl stuff. It's a waterproof wall board stuff. Makes really good, easy cutting, great stencil material that they project up, whatever it is that they want. They cut it out, and then they go and they just found this. It's only about 14 cents a square foot for this nice good banner material. It's nylon reinforced. It's beautiful. And it's only 14 cents a square foot, so it costs like $1.20, $1.30 for a 4x8 sign. And it's white on one side and black on the other. Because we've always needed to find the white. We could never get the white. Some black, different things in color, but the white was too translucent. They just keep going to these different places and landscaping places and home improvement, and wall covering, whatever, and they found it. And I go, oh, that's always been our holdup, was finding cheap material to make the signs. Mm. That it's always been recycled billboards. Well, they stop making that accessible to us after the Love Illusion. Right. The word came on from down high, up high, and they said, "No, we're making handbags out of that stuff or something." Because man, they don't get it anymore. So all around the country. So we found this stuff. Kudos to the boys. So what would be some of the some of the other stuff that we were talking about? You got comments on some of the thing. Go ahead.
Well, you did mention Adam Kokesh, and I've had Adam on the show many times, and I had dinner with him in Virginia actually at a conference I was speaking at. And Adam's the whole package. And I had told him then, so we're looking at maybe 2006, where he had just really started out with Iraqi Veterans Against the War. And I said, Adam, you've got the whole package. You know how to speak. He's very good looking. I says, you need to like really be the visible face of this organization. Because a couple of the boys that I met from that group, let me tell you, they had very obvious PTSD. And you really had to be careful how you talked around them because I thought they would just explode.
Yeah, I know. I've met a lot of these kids and they're, they're coming to terms. And we've had people on now. Adam has channeled that, and he has been very well. He ran for Congress, did a great job.
Yeah, he's got his act together,
and he was endorsed by Dr. Paul. He's been here. We got one of some of our red Kokesh sign. You probably didn't see it back there behind the machine. I'm going to show you the signs that we did for him. We went up to Santa Fe and put them all up. That kind of launched his campaign, and it was a young man like that. I tell you what happened. When he spoke at the Revolution March in Washington, D.C., the group there that put the thing on wanted somebody to speak, representing an anti-war crowd and such. And they went to Iraq Veterans Against the War, and they said, well, here you got Adam. Well, I read, while I was preparing for the speech, Gary and I were writing a skit a couple of days before the event on Saturday. It was like a Thursday or Wednesday night or something. We got there early putting up all these signs. Adam lived there in Washington. He went out with my wife and some other intern that was working with him. And they went out putting up signs like 2 a.m, they're putting them everywhere and such because he knew where to put them. And he read my wife his speech. She came back. It's only when she goes, man, you got to read this guy's speech. You got to hear. So we went to dinner with him the next day. Charles Goyette and I. He was one of the speakers there. He's a friend. Mm-hmm. So we all went out to dinner together. And Adam let me read his speech. And I go, oh, Charles, you got to read this. And Adam grabbed it. And he goes, no, nobody else gets to steal my stuff. he's all afraid, right. Charles hadn't already had his written forever, So he had been working on this thing for like a month. And it was beautiful. It was powerful, and we'll play it again sometime. I played it on the show before, but it's been a long time. I'll play that again. And what he did is he really got the crowd going. But there was Michael Shearer was a CIA guy that went long, and it was cutting into Dr. Paul's time, and they wanted me to cut Adam's speech. They're trying to get, no, we don't have time. You got to get Dr. Paul, Chuck Baldwin's speech and then him, and can't do Adam. And I go, no, he's doing it. Well, no, you guys said, no, he's going on. Trust me. You'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I worked out a deal with Chuck Baldwin. I said, I tell you what, if you'll cut your speech back to just 5 minutes or something, you linger up there. I'll go up, shake your hand, so on. Dr. Paul will come up, and you'll get your picture shaking hands with him on the stage. Because later, Ron Paul did eventually endorse him.
Right.
And I'm going, so I'll give you that, and be all good, and you win. And he's like, cool, deal. So that's how we worked it out. So Adam gets up there, gave this speech, kicked butt enough, at the FBI, you know, what's that Chinese curse? May you come to the attention of important people, you know?
Right.
So he did. Well, this, or scumbag people. So this is, you know, the next generation. So I always kept going around calling them congressmen. I go, you think they're not going to get you to run for Congress? You know how rare it is to have someone like you?
Right.
And I go, yeah, blah, 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 blah. I already know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in fact, that's, you know, exactly what happened. So he has a career. And I said, you know, go hardcore. Don't be pulling on that. Of course, they wanted them to be more, you know, palatable and all this other stuff. I go, it doesn't matter. They're not going to let you win. And don't you ever do this. Because if you do, then you're not going to be worth anything 10 years from now, 2 years from now,
right,
in the future, as you're in your 20s, man. Don't sell out now. I'm telling you, I've been doing this a long time. So he took it seriously. And he got a lot of criticism for not, you know, kind of softening the message.
Right.
And he goes, no, you don't you worry about it. I know what I'm doing. And I'm so glad, because now he still has a future, which is what these bad guys are afraid of.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? I just, like, when I talk to these young people, I tell them, this is your future. This is the America and the world you're going to be raising your kids and grandkids in. You know, I'll be long gone. What are you going to do about it? You know, we can't just, you know, depend on, you know, the aging baby boomer population to do it. I says, you guys have to pick up the slack. And I think they're picking it up great.
Yeah. You know, and that's one thing, coming from, you know, a more left perspective. I'm sure you probably, you know, got your dose of Air America when we were on here. And,
no. Actually, I had an interesting experience with Air America.
Please,
I was,
tell.
All my listeners, when they heard about that station coming out, started bombarding the owners to make sure they carried my show. And one of the owners had called me and spent an hour and a half on the phone with me. And basically what he told me, and you know, I have to tell you, don't refer to me as the left, because people have been trying to label me since I was born. They haven't come up with the label yet. Bottom line was, he said that I was a loose cannon and that they would never carry my show because they had to answer to their stockholders. So I said to him, and this is Freedom Radio, I said, why would you name your Freedom Radio after a drug running operation out of Vietnam? And he had no answer for me.
Air America. Yeah. So I've had my experience. We're gonna continue. We'll go into the next hour or two. I got a lot of stuff to share with you and with Maria. You know, different perspective, but you know, it's amazing how when you're looking for the truth, you find out kind of the same things.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Some factual information. What the heck? Let's go ahead and do some facts. Just for grins and giggles, we'll go ahead and play with that. You know, one of the things I wanted to do is, sometimes I get this freaking internet here working. We'll go ahead and play. There's a segment that is from Network, 1976. You know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, and in that whole movie, there was the focus was on this one guy who was a news broadcaster, and he just, you know, had his fill. So he gets out there and he's screaming and everything. But what a lot of people don't remember is the ending of the movie. They always play the beginning, but they never focus on the ending. And it's just, it's amazing to me the information that is, you know, shared. I found it, you know. Yeah, this is what happens is the owners of the network bring him in. They go, look, yeah, you got 60 million people watching you. Well, it used to be like that, big audiences. Now you can't get 6 million watching anything. They're, you know, nah, I'm good. I'll go rollerblading, or they're on the internet, or they're, you know, watching YouTubes or whatever. That's the one thing that's got them all freaked out, is that they don't have the ability to consolidate people like they did before.
What, control?
Yeah. You know, I mean, but what do you think the control is? Why the control to do what? I mean, right now we got 3M is buying the maker of tracker for people, and it's out of, I think it's coming out of Israel or something. Manufacturing conglomerate 3M company said Tuesday has agreed to pay $230 million in cash for an Israeli company that makes technology used to keep track of people.
Yeah, who are the Nazis now?
Oh, that's my mean answer to it.
Hey,
that was mean.
IBM, RFID. What's the difference?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. You know, this is there's so much stuff going on that you know. How do you see this? Does it even hit your radar screen about them going to a world currency or even a cashless society? And, you know, does this bother you? Like right now we have the IMF, their National Monetary Fund, is eliminating borrowing caps on their rescue facility. You know, it's like European crisis 2.0. You know, here it comes. Because what they did is they you know, had a limit. I think it was, you know, $500 billion credit facility. And they kind of went in and got their little stimulus package and saved Europe. And, ooh, everything's great and wonderful. Well, it's not so great and wonderful that they don't think they need to do it again. And they're taking off the limits. There is no limit. We can print all the credit little thing money,
right,
whatever we make up anytime we want,
exactly,
and want to go to the world.
The Bancor. The Bancor is the money they're talking about,
right,
but that has no backing either. So if they really wanted to end the recession, depression, et cetera, since all this money is just created with basically pressing a few computer keys, why not just hit a few computer keys and eliminate everybody's debt?
Yeah, all this billions.
So make-believe anyway.
Yeah, give it to me.
Right. Funnel it our way.
They're going to lend it to you, so you got to pay them interest. I go,
on make-believe money that doesn't exist.
Oh, you could just give it to me.
Right. It's just a ledger entry. It doesn't even exist.
It's all pretend.
You know, you said you were in your 40s, Ernie. You know, when I was young,
49.
You know, younger, way younger than that. I remember when they were talking about, and it was a conspiracy theory at the time, that they were moving us into being a cashless society. I remember when the first credit cards came out, and they were Sears credit cards, and you were like the richest guy on your block if you actually got a Sears credit card.
You know, I remember my parents got this late 60s or
right,
something.
Yeah. You remember it, right?
Yeah, I remember Sears credit card. Man, we're going to Tampa, Florida.
Right.
We're going to Sears.
I remember my dad showing us the card, sitting us down, and saying to us, this is a card you only use if you have cash in the bank to pay when the bill comes. You never use one of these things unless you have the money to pay it off in full when the bill comes. And you know what? I've never used credit cards any other way since he taught me. But today, a lot of places don't even accept cash if you go in. Everybody wants credit cards. So we have, in just a maybe 30-year period, 30, 40 years, moved totally into a cashless society. So were we conspiracy freaks back then? No, we were conspiracy factualist. There's a new word.
you know, they try and make you believe that by believing in any kind of a conspiracy as if it's a bad thing. And I'm going, well, I don't know. Is it true? Well, that's not the point. It's conspiracy theory.
Well, but everybody.
And I'm going, but is it true?
All right.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Conspiracy facts. Well, if you look at it, when somebody gets convicted in a court of law in this country, isn't it because they're convicted of conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to commit fraud? Conspiracies always bar the charges, except when we're talking about conspiracy, then it's bogus and it's some kind of craziness. But to me, the greatest conspiracies are anything that comes out of our government's mouth. To me, they're guilty until proven innocent.
Says who?
Says me, Maria.
I love when you do that.
Says
you
me.
Because says me, because I can't.
Because I'm me and this is it. That's my label. What's my label? Maria, one of a kind. My mother said they broke them all. Thank God.
You know, this is, I'm trying to pull this up because this network thing really, it's kind of.
His speeches in that movie are incredible.
Well, this isn't the speech that he gives. This is the speech that I think it's, was it Ned Beatty? You know, I think it's his name. And it's he's explaining to this guy that has all of this power. And he's going, let me explain it to you. He goes, boy, I don't think you get it. This is like talking heads on Fox kind of thing. Let's go ahead and see if this will go and you'll see what I mean.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to take you into our conference room. Seems more seemly a setting for what I have to say to you. I started as a salesman, Mr. Beale. I sold sewing machines and automobile parts, hairbrushes and electronic equipment. They say I can sell anything. I'd like to try to sell something to you.
Now, this is the end of Network, 1976.
Valhalla, Mr. Beale. Please sit down.
And then he went on TV, and he sold out after he got this speech from the boss man. Well, this is what goes on every day.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, Mr. Beale, and I won't have it! Is that clear? You think you merely stopped a business deal? That is not the case. The Arabs have taken billions of dollars out of this country, and now they must put it back! It is ebb and flow, tidal gravity, it is ecological balance. You are an old man who thinks in terms of nations and peoples. There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immane, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. Petrodollars, electrodollars, multidollars, Reichmarks, rims, rubles, pounds, and shekels. It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet. That is the natural order of things today. That is the atomic and subatomic and galactic structure of things today. And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone. Am I getting through to you, Mr. Beale? You get up on your little 21-inch screen and howl about America and democracy. There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today. What do you think the Russians talk about in their councils of state? Karl Marx? They get out their linear programming charts, statistical decision theories, Minimax solutions, and compute the price-cost probabilities of their transactions and investments, just like we do. We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime. And our children will live, Mr. Beale, to see that perfect world.
Yeah, they're a perfect world.
In which there's no war.
Yeah, nor famine. No, we're in control. Yeah, Codex Alimentarius. This is, and what happens after this, he gets back, he gets on TV, and he sells out. And all the movie, all the great speeches that are taken out of the movie Network, Faye Dunaway, you know, was a star in this too. It was a great movie. 1976, it was the, you know, bicentennial of America. It was, you know, I'm starting high school. This was one of the most popular movies. And it told the truth right to your face. And everything they said happened.